There you go. Indeed, every picture tells a story, and so does every phone caller. That's why we do open lines at least once a week, and we're doing it right now. Grab one of those lines. I don't know which one. I think you can get one of the wild card lines open, but that may have been taken since the last time I looked. Either way, we'll try and get an open line for you coming up shortly as we continue with your stories next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Ponnett. Let's start with Hale this hour in Greensburg, Indiana, on a wild card line on Coast to Coast. Hale?
Yes, Ian. I just want to say that enjoy your show. I'm 81 years old, semi-retired. I work security two nights a week, Friday and Saturday, 11 to 7. So I enjoy hearing you and
good. Well, thank
the comments
you.
That you make.
Well, I appreciate that, and I'm glad to know that. I know there's a lot of your colleagues that are out there working those lonely shifts working security, and it's a tough job out there, so thank you.
What I wanted to put forward to you is my father was a soldier in World War I, and in some of the things that he brought home, I found a songbook published by the government for World War I soldiers. It's maybe like 20 pages or so. And I would suspect that probably is fairly rare.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
I tried to get a ticket to the Antiques Roadshow in Indianapolis, which is the closest place for me.
Sure.
And was not able to do that. So I haven't any idea of its value, but I suspect it is something rare. Have
you know what?
Heard of anything like that before?
Here's what I would do. There's a lot of chat rooms. There's a lot of private groups that get together on these topics just like that. It's nice to have the Antiques Roadshow because it's, you know, kind of a straight line from point A to point B. But I think there's plenty of other people online that would be very interested in, and whether it's on eBay, you get an idea of what something like that is worth. And who knows how many other copies out there of that exist. It sure does reflect the times, though, doesn't it? That by World War II, you know, if they were going to send music to the front lines, it would have been in the form of a, you know, Glenn Miller and his Army Air Force Band CD or Benny Goodman, album to the front lines. It would be something like that, not sheet music for people to sit around a piano and sing. I kind of love the quaintness of that.
Yes, it's darkened over time, as you might imagine.
Right.
But it has all the old World War songs in the book.
Is there a long way to Tipperary in it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's kind of like the big hit. Well, Hale, that's way interesting. I think you got to suss around a little bit, try some different configurations in a Google box and see what comes up. And I think, like me, you'll find somebody out there that's collecting it, and you'll get an idea of what something like that is worth. Then you have to ask, is it worth getting rid of it for that, too, which is the other question.
Oh. I'm only interested in its value, really, but no, I don't care to get to dispose of it at all.
Good. Well, it's priceless. I can just tell you right now, if no price can get rid of it, then it is priceless. But talk to your insurance agent, and thank you. Let's get to a wild card line. Lyndon is in Utica, New York, on Coast to Coast. Lyndon?
Hi, Ian, long-time listener, first-time caller.
Glad to have you. Thank you.
Thank you. Not calling about artwork lost or stolen or any kind of art collection. I'm actually calling about UFOs tonight.
Great. You've seen?
What? More than one, from what I could tell. I'll explain to you what time it happened, where it happened. I'm calling just outside the city of Utica. I don't know if you're familiar with upstate New York.
I am. Very much so.
Okay. Well, there's a town called Yorkville connects with Utica. You could barely pretty much walk just a couple hundred feet. We were right on the city line. We were looking at a used car dealer at some cars, me and my buddy, around 10:45 tonight. And it's kind of a weird, it's like a parking lot / road. And I looked out my window and I saw these orange circles coming up in the sky. And I said, what is that? I pulled my car forward into the parking lot. I got out. I encouraged my buddy to get out. Lo and behold, Ian, there were, I would say, over a 4-minute period, about 200 yards apart. There are about 40 of these circle
wow
objects. They were orange, and they were coming. You could see they were coming. They were kind of lifting off from about 4 or 5 miles away and coming up over the city skyline gradually, going straight up at a kind of a severe right angle, then straight up into the clouds. And it was partly cloudy. We followed it around to the adjacent street that ends up going into the city, and they totally disappeared. Now, within 30 seconds after that, a plane came up, which you could tell was a plane. It had a red flashing light, and it seemed to follow the trail of what was left, a vapor trail or something. And then it did a 360 and landed, apparently, in the site where they may have lifted off from. And again, these are separated about 200 yards apart. They were kind of floating, no noise, perfectly circle-like or cylinder-like, if you will. And they were orange, bright orange, like a city street light.
You know, like the halogen lights, like those new street lights. You know, that's so interesting to me. And it sounds like it's in such a kind of a prominent place in the sky. I wonder how many other people might have seen something like that. So that's kind of the fun part here about open lines, is we can start that conversation and see whether anybody else saw something either from the same place you did, or maybe saw a different angle on it and therefore have more details. Like, did it fly overhead for somebody else who just looked up? But it reminds me of something I saw earlier this week. It's not a new show, but they were rerunning it on the History Channel of the UFO Roswell in Russia. So, you know, Russia had its own Roswell-like incident, and they had people on talking about that. And what I thought was particularly interesting were the number of classic some of the original rock stars of the Russian jet age. So they had the woman who was the Chuck Yeager of Russia, and she was amongst many who spoke openly of having watched a UFO dogfight with Russian planes, and very matter-of-factly. So she wasn't, you know, she was just kind of saying, this is what happened, and it's not uncommon, and she wasn't alone. I wondered what the culture was in Russia that they felt like they could talk more openly about that as pilots without fear of getting grounded. But there you go. So, Lyndon, we put the call out, and we'll see if anybody else takes it up coming up on Coast to Coast as we continue with open lines. We're going out to California. Wildcard line, Roger hanging on Coast to Coast. Roger?
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to mention my little town. I live in Shingletown, California. I guess the reason I'm calling is you guys are talking about artwork tonight, and this is something that's been on my mind for a few years. And basically, my father used to work in the film industry before he passed away, and he was a sound technician, and he was kind of a gopher.
Right.
He worked on a number of films from his era. Greatest Story Ever Told, Ten Commandments, lots and lots of films.
Sure. Right.
And he had an 8mm projector, and he sold off a lot of that stuff, but there was one film that he worked on, which was The Misfits over in Reno. We lived in Reno, and that's the
reason. Marilyn Monroe, right?
Yeah.
Marilyn Monroe, Clark Gable, is he in it?
Yeah, Clark Gable, Marilyn Monroe, Thelma Ritter, Montgomery Clift, all those people were in it, and they drank a lot, and it was directed by John Ford.
Right.
One of the things is that the can that says Misfits on it, he told me that he'd sold that one off too. And then my mom, before she passed away a few years ago, she said, no, he didn't. It's in the other films. So all those years I thought he sold it, but there's a really good chance that it's in with the other film.
And these are just home movies he took.
Yeah, 8mm.
On the set of these films.
Of the I have some outtakes from it, you know, that were made into pictures of Marilyn Monroe, and I have that there's got to be some Clark Gable in there because he was friends with Clark Gable.
Sure.
When he died, Roy Rogers came to his funeral. But the thing of it is Yeah, that's happening. And I got together with a friend of mine, and he and I are going to be taking it to a professional camera place.
Neat.
They're going to charge us a lot of money,
really cool.
I think, to do it. But we're going to do it, and we're going to stand over their shoulders so that we don't have any edit problems.
Without a doubt.
We're going to see. We're going to see what we got. And
well, that sounds fascinating. And I think there are TV shows out there that would love that, too. So, I mean, I think that you might want to consider contacting, especially if you think you've got something of a Marilyn Monroe, that being in candid shots. There's one
shot of her
never-ending appetite
on the hood of a car, which my mom hated. She hated that.
Interesting.
It's all in there. It's in there. And, you know, I work in the film industry myself, and I have a lot of contacts, but I haven't wanted to include all that. This is the first time I've ever really talked about it.
Well, I appreciate you making this show. Thank you, Roger, and good luck with that. I know that there was another story earlier this week about the FBI having authenticated Marilyn Monroe porn that was being sold privately, but there was sort of this unofficial auction or something that they were doing, and opening bid was $500,000, but it was expected to go for much higher. In South America, a porno movie shot in 1946 or 47, and I say porno movie, kind of a stag film, and Marilyn Monroe is in it, and the FBI confirmed that that is in fact Marilyn Monroe. What they disconfirmed, however, is that the other person in the movie is John F. Kennedy. They said there is no truth to that, and they did some measurements, as it were, and determined that that wasn't his face or his shoulders or his body or whatever it was they were measuring. Let's go to Linnell, west of the Rockies in California, on Coast to Coast for Open Lines. Linnell?
Yeah. Hi. Can you hear me?
Sure can. So, well, go ahead.
Okay. Well, I'm going to make a long story short. I lived on a hill in my last house, and when looking out the window, I saw a wreck. And the cars had just started to slow down, and I knew it was a wreck by a street on a corner that they've had lots of wrecks, about a half a mile away looking. And so I started praying, asking God to send earthly and heavenly angels. And when I finished, I went back to write my checks for the month, and it was near the first of the month. And just a little while later, I heard very clearly they're having to use the jaws of life to get them out of there. So I went to the window outside to the patio and looked, and by then, all of the paramedics were there and a lot more cars were stopped and all that. So I went into a deep prayer again, and I knew this was really bad. And I really, very vividly used my faith to ask God to please send earthly and heavenly angels. And before I knew it, fast as lightning, I was over the wreck with the angels.
Huh.
And they were surrounding me. Now, I didn't see wings. They were just light beings. And we were looking down over the wreck. And so I asked where the other girl was. And he said that they had taken her over and that I didn't need to worry about her. So then I said, well, where is her body? And they said that I didn't need to worry about that either, to just pay attention to the one that was there. Now, when I looked down to the one who was there, she was a blonde, and she had her hair spread out.
Right,
right down the center of her head was a really dark line.
Okay.
And I wasn't sure what that was. So I talked to her, told her it wasn't her time to go, that God had saved her for a special mission, that she had many more things to do here on earth and many people's lives to touch, and talked to her kind of that way. Don't remember everything I said, but that was the gist of it.
Wow.
And then when it was over, just as suddenly as I had gotten out of my body and come to be over the wreck, I went back into my body at the house. And I slid into my body just like silk would be pouring over your skin. It was really, really nice. And I expected to be shocked in, but I
right.
That's what happened. And I got down on my knees, and I thank God for using me as the best love, his love and light.
I'm going to give you a heads up on a book and an author that I think you would enjoy in light of what you just told me. The book is called Invisible Worlds, and it's by Anthony DiStefano. And he writes about exactly what you're talking about. And I think if you just even went around on the internet and took a look at it, you'll see more of what I'm talking about. And he writes very seriously about the experience that you just had. And I appreciate you sharing it with us because that was great. First time caller line, James is in Brooklyn on Coast to Coast. Morning, James.
Yes, good morning, Ian. Oh, good morning.
Morning.
Yes. I'm a painter, and like 20 years ago, I went to Queens and I bought paintings. And one of these paintings, I think it's Degas.
Degas? Degas. Right, Degas.
It's painted on board.
Mm-hmm.
It's not on canvas. And I don't know if it's original or what. But also with that painting, I also bought a couple of books. And these two books, one was Longfellow, and the other one was by, what's his name? Bunyan. John Bunyan?
Right.
Yes, but the Longfellow book, his name is he has the signature of his name in the book.
Henry Wadsworth Longfellow.
Yes.
And then the other was, were you thinking of Pilgrim's Progress from Bunyan?
Yes, yes, exactly. Okay.
Well, if those are first editions, if those are signed copies, those are very valuable.
Okay. In the Longfellow book, there's a postcard. And the person he was writing to his lover, his mistress or whatever she was, his wife.
Right.
And I don't know what the signature of the person is, but it was dated 1924.
Well, I think there's got to be somebody who's an insurance appraiser in town. There's got to be somebody who knows something about that type of work. You want to make sure that you're covered. Don't take any chances that you've got something that valuable. And you could have it lost due to theft or to fire. You just don't want to do that. So by all means, find out what those are worth and whether or not they're the real deal. Sounds like it to me. First edition's kind of a tricky business, obviously. But for those people that find them from time to time, worth a fortune. Like they were talking about earlier, this book, Stealing Rembrandts. I found that a painting that had been originally thought of as one of Rembrandt's students turned out to be his. And literally the painting went from like a value of $100,000 to $11 million in one day with that new assessment that the art critic was able to prove. So it's out there. Don't miss your chance. Find out what's in your attic, in your garage, in your basement somewhere. And better to find out and know for sure than to keep thinking, someday I'll find out whether I'm a millionaire. By listening to Coast, this is Ian Punnett. Live from the Premier Radio Network studios in New York. And there we go. Keeping in theme tonight, moving pictures. And what about me? Well, what about me? Well, I can't get, for some reason, even though I'm in the Ryan Seacrest studios, I'm having trouble getting the internet Wi-Fi on, so I haven't been able to tweet, but I'll get caught up with my tweets later on. If you want to sign up for that, Deacon Punnett is my Twitter feed, and we're always sending messages on what's happening and my travels and stuff like tomorrow, which would be great. Good show coming up tomorrow night. We'll get a glimpse into the near future from really one of the smartest people that has ever been on Coast to Coast ever. And Howard Bloom, he knows it takes a genius to know one, doesn't it? He knows the genius of the beast of this economy and what will happen if the debt ceiling fails. And I say fails, meaning that they fail to reach a new compromise or we have to default on money. Some people are saying nothing will happen. Much ado about nothing. Other people say that and then they go, I think. We'll see what Howard Bloom thinks and what this might mean for your financial future coming up tomorrow night on Coast to Coast. I might tweet a little bit about that tomorrow, too, or put some messages up on the Facebook page as well. Glad to have you following, and thanks for all your responses and your open line calls, which we'll get back to coming up next, giving George Norrie the night off. This is Ian Punnett on Coast to Coast. We pick up open lines with Joe in Abilene, east of the Rockies on Coast to Coast. Joe?
Send us some snow, Ian.
I hear you guys are getting some of the rain from the tropical storm Don, but not as much as Texas was hoping
for.
No,
that's way down on the coast. That's 500 miles away from us, unfortunately.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
Well, let's see. Got a short personal one and two mind blowers. Our local real estate office that I work with had a girl in there working as a secretary. She said, "What do you think this thing's worth?" And she had bought this little print, about a 9 by 10, at a garage sale for 10 cents. And I looked at it and I said, "Well, I don't know. It's kind of strange, isn't it?" She said, "Yeah, it's got this real signature on it, but it's in pencil. And it was done up kind of like a children's illustration, kind of a pastel parrot."
Right.
It was a portrait of a parrot. And I said, "Well, why don't you go ahead and photograph it, send it up to Sotheby's or Christie's and see what they've got to say about it." Came back, and they said it was an original print by the Audubon of Australia. And he would go out into the wood and paint or draw these things up. His wife would make stone prints of them and put them in a book. She got one of the originals. The thing was worth about $1,200.
How about that?
For 10 cents. Not a bad investment.
Not bad at all.
The second big one, I was reading an autobiography of a black architect who was talking about an anecdote he had of a place he was doing. He had a large wall to cover, and he was looking around to find something cheap that he could cover that wall with, and he found at a Goodwill store, I believe it was in Brooklyn, New York, of all places, four framed large, looked like pen and ink prints, and they kind of all fit together into a sunburst. And he said, "Well, gee, that looks like a pretty good deal, and I think that's going to do it." They were quite large, about a 4 by 6, I believe, each one of them. And so I think he paid $20 a piece for them. Turned out to be the original sketches of the city of Paris, appraised at about $800,000, and this was about 20 years ago.
Wow.
Then the big one was a fellow who had gone.
That wasn't the big one? $800,000?
No. Here comes the big one. You ready?
All right. I am ready. this is great.
This will make everybody swallow hard, and the truckers are going to come to a screeching halt. Fellow went to a gem and mineral show, which are kind of big down here in the Southwest. The gun shows, gem and minerals, and people bring in their little collections of stone cuts and what have you.
Sure.
And in that, they usually have a little bowl out in the front of the table filled with eggs. There are little agate and stone spun eggs. They're lapped eggs, but they're made out of stone or some sort of precious
mineral of some sort. Yeah. Right.
And a fellow walked up about 10 o'clock in the morning and looked through them. He said, "Oh, what'd you take for this one?" And it was this kind of a lavender colored egg. And the fellow said, "Oh, I don't know, $15. So you take 10. He said, "Yeah, takes 10. Walks outside, and I imagine he did a Snoopy dance of Snoopy dances. The sun probably hit that thing, and those six spindly arms just spilled over the top of that stone. Turned out to be the largest star sapphire ever found.
Wow.
He had it recut down here in Texas. It's called the Star of Texas. It's in the Guinness Book of World Records.
How about that?
Lavender star sapphire for $10.
And how much did it end up being valued for?
About $3 million.
About $3
million. Yeah, had it recut down here. And it's called the Star of Texas. It's in the Guinness Book of World Records.
These are all terrific stories. I'm so glad we added this as a theme in Open Lines. And thank you, Joe. That one's going to be tough for anybody to beat. I mean, I don't want to declare the I'll top that competition over, but I think $3 million and the Star of Texas picked up at, you know, just at a gun show, I think that is going to be tough to beat. And yet, and you also don't have to go back there either. You can do anything you want on Open Lines. He mentioned truckers coming to a screeching halt. So let's pick up Dennis, who's trucking through Maryland on an open line on Coast to Coast. Dennis?
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing all right. Go ahead. Where do you want to take us?
This is a family story. We refer to it as the Italian fiddle story.
Any particular Italian fiddle you want to talk about, Stradivarius?
Yeah, my grandparents are musicians, and I saw a 2020 episode about 10 years ago where they found a Stradivarius violin in someone's closet in New York City. And I was visiting my grandparents, and they have all these different instruments on the wall. And I said to my grandmother, I said, how much, you know, what is that, the violin on the wall? What is that? She's like, that's our Italian fiddle. And I said, well, can I take it down and look at it? I said, I saw this 2020 episode about Stradivarius violins. And lo and behold, it took it off the wall. It was a Stradivarius violin. I think it was made in 1836.
Wow. Did it say Stradivarius on the inside?
I had looked up it's some kind of insignia, and then I went and took it somewhere and had someone take a look at it. It was verified as a Stradivarius, yes.
Because I saw it on Pawn Stars or something where somebody had a Stradivarius, but there was different types of Stradivarius. And so it depended on the finish and the type of wood and the year that it was made, but that's pretty darn cool. And what was the final cost for that? What were you able to get for it?
Well, no, my grandfather's still alive. He has put it in safe storage in the meantime, but they were floored. It was something that stayed in the family for, you know, a couple generations. So I think it was worth over $100,000.
Well over. I'm a big believer in selling stuff like that, not because it's just the, you know, sort of the crash kind of capitalism of it all. It's not just that, but it's a matter of, you know, taking some money off the table in life, which is never a bad thing, and putting it on a cash basis in your accounts, but also because that means somebody else who really enjoys that will be able to play that. And somebody else who wants to be invested will preserve it, and it will be better. The universe will be better served in a way by selling it. Not saying your grandparents have to sell it, but that would always be how I would feel. If I had something really like that, I want to make sure it gets in the hands of somebody that really knew what to do with it. But thank you, Dennis. Love that story. Mike's in California, also on Coast to Coast. Mike,
good morning.
It's open lines.
Ian.
Yeah, Harry. Great. Good Go morning. Ahead.
Oh, good. Good. That last story and what you just said, that kind of sums up me. I'm a scrounge. I'm one of these guys that the American pickers ever came by my house, they'd have a field day. I just collect things. I like them for the historical value or whatever, but I've never really sold anything. But years ago when I first started collecting stuff, there was a guy out there named Tony Hyman, I think it was, and he put a book out called I'll Buy That, and it was fantastic. Like I said, it's over 20 years ago, so it was before the internet and everything else, and you could go to the book and look up a subject, say Barbie dolls or G.I. Joes or art or China or whatever, and he listed all the experts in those areas with their phone numbers, and you could contact the people. Send them photographs, they would tell you what it was worth. And I don't know, I guess I should Google search it,
yeah,
to see if that's still going on, because it was really fantastic at the time. But with what you were just saying, I have something that is probably of no value to anyone. But to me, I think it is really fantastic. It was my step-grandfather. When my grandmother died, my dad asked me to go live in her house. I went up in the attic. I found some boxes, and there was a lot of old photographs and stuff. And there were these panoramic pictures. They're probably 18 inches to 2 feet long and maybe 9 inches high. And they were of Yosemite Valley back in like 1914.
Right.
And it was the Conservation Corp that was building the trails and everything else. And my grandfather was part of it. And they had all the troops and the tents out in the middle of Stone Valley, and you could see the peaks behind it and everything else. And just recently I ran across them again. I store this stuff and I forget about it. And I was thinking, you know, next time I go to Yosemite, I'm going to find one of those museums and see if they'd be interested in displaying it.
And were they?
You know, I don't care about the money involved in it. It's the history for everybody to see. You know, and what you just said, it really touched me in that sense that, you know, I'm going to do that now. I got to take a trip to Yosemite. I'm up in the mountains right now. I haven't been camping in 3 years. I'm blessed with being up 7,000 feet in the Sierras right now, looking at the most beautiful stars and a lake in front of me and everything right. else while I'm talking to you.
Well, you got to love that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah,
you may have the best vantage point for any caller this morning listening to Coast to Coast, and thanks for jumping in. Love that. And again, it's open line, so you can take us anywhere you want to go. And I'm still kind of hoping that somebody else might have seen what a previous caller, Lyndon, saw up around the Utica, New York area, too. So that might still happen in our final hour of Coast to Coast, which is on the way. Eric is in Portland on Coast to Coast for Open Lines and for George Norrie tonight. Go ahead, Eric.
Hi, good evening. Excellent show, as always.
Thank you.
I just wanted to get through on Open Lines for a chance because over the past months or whatnot, George has talked about, you know, feeling something isn't right and has noticed people of prominent stature in his life, et cetera, getting very angry and having violent outbursts and just not quite being themselves. And I've kind of been, I have my own hunch on it. I think since everything has changed with the earth itself right now, I think it something has to be tied in with the Schumann resonance of the earth because it's the earth's heartbeat. And if we're supposedly in tune with that and us are having right. a circadian rhythm.
Right.
And, I think that in turn with the galactic alignment, which is going to happen, the planets are going to line up. I just think that really has a lot to do with it. I've also noticed kind of a weird pattern, if you will, all across the United States. And yes, of course, there's going to be people getting into accidents on a daily basis anywhere at any given point in time. But if you really pay attention, it's kind of weird how certain news stories on different parts of the United States pretty much are saying the same stuff, like people walking out in the cars all of a sudden, or bicyclists.
Right.
All of a sudden, and it's not just, you know, it'd be one thing if it was just, okay, you know, it's a bicyclist that, you know, wasn't paying attention and just happened to get hit. But
sure.
I think it's more than that. And I think it with us, as with our brain being receivers, no different than a radio, so to speak, all these things are all vibration and all frequency. And, you know, sometimes people kind of get that little fuzzy in-between signal that you get on
yep.
the radio.
And
right. I think that's what the UFOs are. That's what Bigfoot is. That's what the Loch Ness Monster is
yeah.
and the ghosts and all of these things. And if you're lucky enough to happen to stay consciously receptive in that moment long enough to see long enough, you know, and then once it happens, you know, God knows, some people want to see it again and again and again and never get the opportunity ever
right.
again. But yet, you know, I'm...
Well, I appreciate that. I'm going to get another caller in before the top of the hour. But I like what you're saying, and actually it speaks to something which I've been taking notes on. I don't know how often you might be working under circumstances where you're exhausted. I find myself doing that a lot. Like, for example, tomorrow... here I am going to be doing Coast to Coast till late or early into the morning on Saturday, and I'm on East Coast time, and my body clock's on Midwest time, but I didn't get any sleep, really, because of all the traveling and seeing Planet of the Apes, the new movie Rise of the Planet of the Apes. So my body clock's off a little bit. So that means tomorrow I'm going to be in these meetings, and I'm going to have moments, I just know it, because I keep a pen handy, where I am beginning to kind of nod off. Where I can feel myself getting a little fuzzy. And I've been so curious about the thoughts, the images, the things that I think I hear when I'm getting fuzzy like that. And I've been jotting them down, and they're so weird. I should probably tweet them, but I mean, they're just, it's so strange. And I don't, I mean, just where it's something you start to think somebody else just said, and they didn't say it, but it came from, you know, maybe just what Eric was getting at, some kind of other dimension that comes in between these two prominent states. Well, that leaves us with enough time to get Roy from D.C. on Coast to Coast in before we get to another hour of open line calls coming up next. Roy, still there?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Hi, Ian. Yeah, I was wondering if you ever saw a film called Entrapment with Sean Connery and Catherine Zeta-Jones. It was about
I kind of made reference to it tonight when we were talking with the authors of Stealing Rembrandt's.
Oh, you
yeah.
did? Okay.
Right. Well, because all of the when Catherine Zeta-Jones has to get past all of those red laser beams.
Right. Oh, right. Okay.
Great
I
scene.
I just wanted to say that in reference to your last call, I think we're coming out of a decade, if there ever was a decade that came out of the Twilight Zone. It was the last one ever since 2000. First, it was Enron, and then September 11th, 2001. We had just come out of the 90s, you know, the Clinton era, a very prosperous, very successful decade. And then this decade has been like a time warp, just completely opposite. And I think we're all beaten down and tired. And I think... in alignment with the Mayan calendar and the alignment of the planets, I think it's just having a feeling on all of us. We all feel so overwhelmed right now, what George Norris often mentioned.
Well, you know what? I think you make an interesting argument. I will tell you that there's a book about that very same subject, and it's called The Ego, and it's about the 9/11 attack as a kind of awakening, is a period of, it's sort of a paradigm shift. I won't get into that now, except to say we'll get to it closer to the anniversary of 9/11 coming up on Coast to Coast in 10 years since 9/11 happened, and that's just what, 6 weeks away. So, if you can hang on, we'll give you all the numbers you need in just a moment, and you grab one of those lines. We'll try and get one open for you, and you become part of our last hour of open line calls. We're doing it live on Coast to Coast. Give George Norrie a night off. And if you haven't been yet, if you haven't signed up for the, you know, for the newsletter or become a Coast Insider, I guess you don't have the newsletter anymore, do you? If you be a Coast Insider, you can go back and listen to that first hour. You might have missed it, about Stealing Rembrandt's. Kind of nice to have that in your back pocket. You never know when you want to go back and listen to a show. Anytime you want. Coast Insider. Find out more at coasttocoastam.com. This is Ian Ponet.